You're tuned in to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
And hello, good afternoon, and welcome to another stellar edition of The Drive here on Fan Run Radio. Russell Smith punching the time clock on a beautiful Thursday afternoon edition of the show. Thursday.
Can't believe it's already Thursday.
What's happening on Thursday? Is Thursday?
Oh, yeah. Eric Berry. Two weeks.
2 weeks. 2 weeks, ladies and gentlemen.
14.
Oh, man.
Who's your favorite 14 besides Eric Berry?
Is Colquitt 14?
I think so.
Other number 14s.
Is that the greatest what if with that season?
It's up there, man. It's up there. Poor JC, man.
That team was prime.
They were very good. They were very good. I have to get T. Fair to tell that story sometime.
Was he? I guess he was on that team, wasn't he?
He's a freshman, true freshman from Phoenix, Arizona. Number 13 in your program, number one in your heart. Shout out T. Fair this afternoon if he's listening. Ladies and gentlemen, it is National Fajita Day.
I love a fajita.
Good fajitas. I mean,
it's probably one of my favorite foods, period.
One of those presentation foods. When you're somewhere, you order the fajitas and they bring them out and they're sizzling. It just gets everybody's attention. You're like, yeah, yeah, come to daddy.
That steam, the smell of it.
I will say this with the fajitas, though.
Great.
I feel like the second and third fajita are always better. The first fajita, I always say screw it up, but like the proportion, you know, it's like, oh, man, do I put too much meat here, not enough cheese, stuff like that. Maybe it's like I don't usually have it coming out the sides. Usually I know like too much tortilla. Like, ah, man, I should. And then that second one is where, oh, yeah.
It's a sweet spot.
I learned my lessons from the first one. Going to build this second one perfect. That's where it's at. Great.
I like my problem is that I like chicken, steak, and shrimp fajitas.
Well, I mean, that's, yeah, who doesn't? It's all good.
Sometimes they don't. You have to pick.
Yeah. It's a hard decision. Usually go steak.
It depends on how hungry I am. Back in the day, I'd pick two.
I like that. A lot of restaurants, especially in the fast casual realm, are giving you the pick two now.
The pick twos?
Yeah, you get to.
Panera kind of started that whole day, the pick two.
I love a good pick two at Panera. I had one a couple days ago.
People slag on it all the time. It's a solid lunch spot.
Little bit pricey. I mean, we're talking about a turkey sandwich here, but I guess I'm not making it. I'm paying for the convenience, right?
You know what they've got more than it? They're very, very consistent.
They crank it out.
It tastes the same way.
Oh, and they got that bakery. But that's the conundrum of Panera. You go in there like, yep, I'm going to have a little bit of salad, maybe a nice turkey sandwich, bowl of soup, something like that. But then you look over there and you're like, I'm getting a cinnamon roll to go, too.
Yeah, it's Carb City. Chocolate chipper. I like a good bear claw.
They have a mac and cheese bowl, like a bread bowl.
I've never been, like the bread bowl, I don't know, like the science of it.
I watched McClure destroy a bread bowl before.
So good.
It's the way to go?
I don't know. I prefer the bowl, and I'm a baguette kind of guy.
Bread bowls are good for soup. Mac and cheese, it doesn't do the same because it's not really like soaking in as much of the flavor into the bread. Like, that's the whole point.
I feel like mac and cheese in a bread bowl, that's an awful lot of carbs.
What are you
trying to say?
It's a lot. That was my first initial thought as well. Heavy.
Yeah.
That's heavy, man. That's a heavy meal.
I like bread and I like mac and cheese. What's wrong with mixing those two wonderful things together?
Ask your cardiologist. Yeah. So, we welcome you in this afternoon. 2 weeks out, Christopher Gabriel cometh.
I thought I saw the
matter
flags.
Of moments. Yep, hurricane warning. And I go ahead and warn you, my man's a little fired up. 2 weeks out, most positive guy I know is always is always pointing out the haters, the negavals. That's not CG, man. He is the perpetual optimist, and he's feeling it. He's feeling it this year. He's on that 4-0 headed into the off week, going down to Baton Rouge, ranked in the top 15 train, maybe top 10. So CG coming up in a mere matter of moments on many of these fine fan-run affiliates. I'm Russell Smith, Bears here. Marcus Young's here. We're with you till 6 p.m. And see what else is going on today. Oh, the Smoky Gray is back.
Oh, God.
University of Tennessee announcing today, Smoky Gray back for football. How does that strike you, Bear? You not a
big... What's next? We're going to bring back that stupid turnover trash can of his? If it was anybody other than Botch Jones...
Be kind.
I probably wouldn't have as big a... My deal is, when the hell are we going to wear our regular uniforms now? We got dark mode. We got smoky grays. We got this. We got that.
Not going to wear them very much. I don't think you're going to see them very much, which is sad. I'm kind of with
you. You're
going
to anger some people.
Well,
some people
I'm going to anger some?
No, they are.
Oh.
Some people you do not want to anger.
What does that mean?
The message board
people. Are you threatening?
No, I'm not.
The administration? The message board people. You don't want to make them angry.
No, because they've got nothing but time.
Nike's smoky gray uniform will return to Rocky Top this football season. The alternate design will serve as a uniform option for Tennessee football this fall as part of the new Smoky Gray series. According to a release from the university, the new initiative will see the Volunteers wear smoky gray uniforms for at least one game, which means probably two, for each of the next four seasons, with the potential to scale beyond those years. So, I mean, like, reread between the lines. They're going to establish the smoky gray as part of the regular rotation over the next 4 years, and then at that point, it's going to be on, man. I think that Tennessee's going to be just this toothpaste is out of the tube, man. And in some ways, you know me, I'm a traditionalist. I'd be fine if we had our home uniform and our road uniform, and that's it. But they're not selling tickets to me. They're selling tickets to the younger set. They're trying to connect with recruits. And recruits want new. Recruits want different. Recruits want modern. And so that's just what it is. So, yeah, they're bringing back. It'll be the same thing they wore in 2015 and 2016, the Nike version with the gray helmet with the Smoky Mountains and stuff. And they still have the black uniforms. And I've heard rumors of a black helmet. Excuse me.
I mean, I don't mind the black. It just don't half-ass it. If you're going to have a black one, get with Nike. Make sure what they send looks good. And go ahead and wrap the helmets with the black.
Well, you're going to go ahead. You're going to have 8 home games. You're going to wear smoky gray. I will go on record predicting for at least 2 of them.
This year?
Yeah. And then... You know you're going to go orange on orange at least once, probably at least twice. So I think max, and you've got the black uniforms too. So I mean,
so we're only going to see our real uniforms like 2 or 3 times.
Maybe
this year?
Maybe once.
Ah, no.
We only have 7 home games.
Only have 7 home games.
They aren't going to do. I don't think they're going to wear the grays twice.
No, I think at least for the first year, I think they'll do one of each.
They might wear one of the alternates for a bowl game.
That even makes me almost madder. We got the most unique color in college football. Nobody has our shade of orange.
Do I need to get my dander up here? I just don't care. I've kind of beaten down. 10 years ago, 2012, and this is after Lane Kiffin brought out the black jerseys, I would have been – I was team tradition, man. I was – no, come on, man. We're not Oregon. We're not Kentucky. We're not one of these schools that has to screw with our brand, man. We're an iconic brand.
Yeah.
Be us.
Us,
be
Alabama, Penn State.
Yeah, be Tennessee. We're in that exclusive group with Michigan and Ohio State and Notre Dame and Alabama and Penn State. And USC, we have an iconic uniform. There's no need to mess with it. But it's been messed with so many times at this point that I just...
Yeah, and I get that, but damn, dude, you can't just wear your like normal uniform like once or twice.
Well, that's what it's going to be.
That's the stupidest damn thing I've ever heard.
No, it's not.
It is, and I dare Christopher Gabriel to come in here and sheep it up for that.
Oh.
I'll take him to task.
You won't.
I will.
So this has really got you fired up on a Thursday afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really does. That's completely and totally asinine. I'm all for having the alternates, but, at what point they're not the alternates? The alternate is our traditional damn uniform. It's the most beautiful uniform in the history of uniforms.
That's what it's going to be. You're going to wear so many black and gray uniforms.
And this and
different
that.
Helmets and orange helmets and chrome helmets and all that stuff that wearing the uniform, the traditional uniform that we all know and love and have grown up with and think of when we think of Tennessee football, that's going to be the alternate. That's going to be the throwback.
Yeah. They can take that orange and orange, they can toss it in the river. That's a horrible idea. Historically speaking, we've never had a whole lot. And I saw where, what's his name? Why can I not think of the guy's name he used to work with us here? Chad. Chad Fields compiled the numbers of what our records were in the different uniforms. Guy's got a lot of time on his hands.
Wow. Anyhow, Chad Fields catching a stray on the drive this afternoon.
The orange on orange, like, it looked all right last year, but orange. I'm still traumatized from the year we came out to play Alabama and we were orange on orange on orange with the orange cleats. Gene Jelks ran for like 800 yards in the first quarter on us. 56-0 at halftime or something crazy like that.
People have been just sending me this left and right, the clip of Chris Doering on SEC Network last night going through Kentucky's schedule.
How much dope did he smoke on the way to the studio last night?
Well, I mean, when you look at it, it's not...
They ain't beating Georgia, dude.
That's the only one that's out that I think is like... That's crazy. I mean, they could go 10-2. He's got their one loss. To me, as long as their one loss is to Tennessee, that's fine. I mean, that soft schedule, man. What
Stackhouse from overtime. I didn't realize this. Stackhouse looked up their all-time record in football. They're losers.
They have a losing all-time record?
Yes.
Wow.
By like 30 or 40 games.
I said, TJ got mad at me yesterday. He didn't call yesterday. I think TJ's...
Why'd he get mad at you?
I think he's got a problem.
Call Matt Jones and tell him about it, TJ.
I said on Twitter that, to me, the Kentucky self-immolation thing that's going on this summer with Mark Stoops just letting the chopper spray and John Calipari being told to STFU by his athletics director, who all their fans evidently hate,
yeah,
is the feel-good hit of the year.
It is.
And I predict, and I stand by this, I mean this, within 2 years, Mark Stoops will be the head coach at Iowa.
Wow.
John Calipari will be in the NBA. And Kentucky will be back in the cellar in football and struggling in basketball. And I'm here for it. It's going to be a great just two-year downfall to watch unfold in real time.
Oh, we'll be sipping on bub.
Should we mark the tape?
You do what you want to do.
Sipping on that bubbly. If they really like went to the cellar in basketball and football at the same time, we'd be popping tops on Dom Perignon in here.
Why guzzling Iowa? It.
What?
Why Iowa?
That's his alma mater.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Didn't know that.
You think Ferentz is really going to retire in 2 years?
I mean, he's got one foot in the grave, dude. He's like 80 years old. What are you talking
How
about?
How old is Kirk? He in
I don't
80.
Know. He's pretty old.
I didn't realize Stoops went to Iowa.
I mean, he's feeling unappreciated there. And Ferentz is 67, so he'll be 69, nice, in 2 years, and probably ready to be put out to pasture.
Mark Stoops is a crybaby. He really is.
And you saw that schedule. If they go 10-2 this year, which is possible.
But that's a hideous schedule.
And Iowa does their usual 8-4 thing, whatever, give or take a game. Those Iowa fans are going to be, they're going to be doing that thing.
He'll
be there Gruden. Yeah, yeah, he's like, let's bring him home. Let's bring Mark Stoops home. They don't appreciate you down there, Mark. All right, quick timeout. Christopher Gabriel, KMJ Fresno, joins the festivities when we continue. You're listening to The Drive on Fan Run Radio. Back with more right after this. Fan Run Radio, The Drive continues. Russell Bear and Marcus back with you. Thursday afternoon edition of the show. Welcome in Christopher Gabriel, KMJ Fresno on the Big Orange Phillies phone lines. Good afternoon, CG. How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, brother? It's doing great out here. It's a little too warm for my liking. You know, when kickoff comes to Fresno State football, usually the opening night game, it's about 107 or 108 at kickoff. It's
going to
be 105. Yeah. It's going to be 105 today. When I used to host the pregame show, I did that for 4 years. The guy who was our boss wanted us looking real professional, what have you. So he had us in sport coats, button-down shirts, and ties.
Brutal.
We would have folks from like ESPN2 coming in or CBS Sports Network coming in. They'd look at us and be like, "What the hell's wrong with you guys? What are you doing? You live out here." You know, like, well, you know, got to do what the boss says. So I don't know what it's going to be like for opening night Ball State, but it's probably not going to be 108.
It might be toasty down there on campus. I mean, it's going to be a full day of tailgating and partying, and it's going to be unbelievable. But I'm sure it'll cool off once the sun goes down. But, I mean, who cares, Christopher? It's football time, man. 2 weeks from tonight, it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome, awesome, baby. And as long as you said awesome, how about a shout-out to our guy, Dick Vitale? The pronouncement today that he's cancer-free. God bless him.
It's great. You know, I didn't see that. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's a wonderful thing. I wrote a tweet, and I don't expect that he'd see it, but, you know, he has been the recipient of so many prayers. I know Bear has had, you know, his own battle and certainly prayers all the time as well. But what I also told Dick was, you know, that he needs to know that he has, because of his faith, and his perseverance, he has been an inspiration for people around the country as well. So good news on that front.
Christopher Gabriel, KMJ Fresno, making his presence felt on the Big Orange Phillies phone lines this afternoon. And CG, 2 weeks out, there's a lot of enthusiasm here in Knoxville. Now, Tennessee misses out on both the polls. A lot of people thought they might be ranked coming into the season. They are not. Several SEC opponents are, including Arkansas, Ole Miss, Kentucky is ranked, and Pitt is number 16 or 17, I think, in both polls. Does that change the way you feel at all about Josh Heupel's second team coming into the year?
Not one bit. Not one bit. I'm not a big fan of the preseason poll. I've railed against it for years. I mean, obviously, I'm just yelling into the wind because it's never going to go away, but I'm a big believer in the idea of how about we have the first poll come out the third week of the season where you get an idea of what teams are really made of. But I think this works to Josh Heupel's advantage, to this team's advantage, because what they're going to be able to do, at least ostensibly we think what they're going to be able to do, is they're going to be able to show everybody how wrong they were. This is a team that was learning a new system last year. You didn't have a lot of depth anywhere, really, but you had some talented pieces, and we all kind of grew together with them, right? We all had these moments where we were in our living rooms stretching our arms out, trying to get overthrown balls, trying to get to them, and that alone kind of hurt the Vols last year. I don't think you're going to see a lot of that this year, and I think what's going to happen is if this team, and it's an if this team does what we believe they can do, they're going to skyrocket up the rankings. And, you know, as long as we're talking about this, about an hour and a half ago, when I got off the air, well, I got off the air at noon your time, but when I got off the air, I had a video sent to me, and it was Tom Fornelli, who's a great writer on college football from CBS Sports, Danny Cannell, I'll reserve judgment, and some other guy. And the other guy was going on and on and on and on about how his exact words were, Tennessee ain't going to finish 9-3. And he proceeded to reel off all the reasons and the games and the teams. And I can see, even though I thought it was ridiculous, I can see where people have that attitude about the Tennessee Volunteers, Russ. And I know you feel this way, and I'm sure Bear and Marcus do as well. And I'll tell you my thought. It's because we have heard so many times hype from, you know, our own writers and people in the Southeastern Conference behind Tennessee thinking they're going to have a big breakout year, and it really hasn't happened. I mean, yeah, there were some bowl games in there, what have you, but we all understood that this program had not seen the corner nor rounded the corner. And so you have people like this guy, along with Cannell and Fornelli, basically saying, yeah, this team's not going 9-3. They're going to be a 6-6 team. And I think for reasons like that, if it matters to fans what the national media thinks, and I think it does matter, and it matters to us too, this is really a crucial year in the lifeline of Tennessee football. I think maybe, guys, more so than any other year I can think of, because Josh Heupel has come in with a dynamic, exciting, exhilarating offense. You have a defensive coordinator, Banks, who obviously needs to improve upon last year, but we saw some things. We saw some hope. They didn't have a lot of depth. And if this team does gel the way we think they can, it's going to show everybody that Tennessee is indeed back. They have rounded the corner. If for some reason some injuries happen, they have some games like last year where we have more games like Ole Miss, Pitt, and Purdue, games that you can say should have won, could have won, some combination thereof, and the Vols end up going 6-6 or 7-5, then you're going to have a lot of people on the national media just basically saying, see, same old Tennessee. That's what Tennessee's been the last dozen years. And you're going to have what I call the VDFL, the Vol Dissenters for Life. You know, the Vol fans who don't want to get on the bandwagon, who would rather be negative. They would rather be contrarian and then just be able to have one great 15-second moment of glory to say, I told you so. I told you guys, and three and out, and overtime, and the drive. I told you guys, we suck. And later for all that, all this team has to do, Russ, is go out, allow the talent to do what they have, play within the system that Josh Heupel has given them, and I think they're going to be just fine.
Christopher Gabriel, KFJ Fresno, with us this afternoon on the Big Orange Phillies phone lines. And Chris, announcement today here on Rocky Top, the smoky gray uniforms are making their return. Of course, they've already got the dark mode uniforms, which I believe are going to be back at some point. So you've got two alternate uniforms. And be interested to hear your take on this. What do you think about it, Chris? Should Tennessee be turning its back on tradition, or is it time to update some things and try and start some new tradition?
Well, this is such a... 50-50 subject for so many fans, and I realize that part of my opinion on this is going to be sounding a little bit like get off my lawn guy. I'm not at all against trying some new things, and that's only because I have two teenage daughters who basically, you know, try to say, okay, stop being like you're in the 1950s. Like, okay, I wasn't around the 1950s, but I get your point. I think there's a point of no return where you go too far, like Oregon. Oregon, for years, for decades, had a classic green and yellow, green and gold uniform. And then they started adding some different combinations. And, you know, some of those are pretty cool. But the vast majority of them, I think, are ridiculous. When you have guys going out on the field, they're in jerseys and helmets, that they look like ducks. I mean, actual ducks. And that might be going too far. But you can go the other way. Teams that don't do the alternate stuff, programs like USC, Penn State, Alabama, I have a great respect for those programs that don't do that, and their fans are all bought in. But I think there's a place in the middle where you can appease fans that want something new, but as well as keeping the tradition of so many decades, in this case of Tennessee football. I don't like the idea of doing more than one game in an alternate uniform or jersey. And we'll get to the style in a second. As far as I'm concerned, Tennessee has one of the great classic uniforms in all of college football. Rivals in the SEC will say, I just can't take that color. Well, nobody really asked your opinion. Nobody really asked your opinion because, again, when you go to clothing shops around the country in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, you see that color in styles all the time. I think Tennessee has a great uniform, especially the home uniform. If they're going to go to an alternate uniform, I know a lot of folks, I'm not a big fan of black. I thought that when Adidas had the contract, there was way too much black in everything. Our colors are not Oklahoma State. Our colors are not Oregon State. Our colors are not Bowling Green. They're orange and white. So feature the orange and white. And if you're going to go to an alternate uniform, okay, if you're going to go black, if you're going to go gray, how about putting some thought behind it and doing something that really is something that meshes with the history of Tennessee football, with the Tennessee River, with the Smoky Mountains, with the rolling hills of the area. Don't just do something to do it. If I may, you know that I spent, 20 plus years on the professional stage. And a lot of that was spent doing Shakespearean productions. I did 21 of them. And when you go to professional theater and you see that a director has decided to make a choice and do an all-female Hamlet or do an all-male Henry V and so on, there's got to be a reason. There's got to be a thematic reason for doing that. If you're doing it as a gimmick, the play is not going to work. The production's not going to work. Similarly, guys, if you're going to go to an alternate uniform, a smoky gray or a black, have a plan and then execute the plan. Have a reason behind it and allow everybody to come in the stadium and see the Vols warming up and say, damn, that looks good. Man, I'm not a fan of those alternate uniforms, but that really looks good. I don't think that they've done enough of that. About the only thing for me that got close to that was the smoky gray helmet with sort of the silhouetted Smoky Mountains. I thought they were on the right track with that. I've seen Florida come up with a couple ideas, and some of their ideas have gone a little too far. I just think if you're going to do something, come up with something that looks good and really has to do with Tennessee, with Knoxville, the river, the Smokies. Don't just go black or go gray for the sake of going black or going gray. That makes sense?
Yeah, I mean, my big fear, Chris, is, and it's funny you should mention Michigan, and I said something to Russ, right before we went on air, I was talking with Russ and Marcus, is it's that, hell, we may have been on air, the fact that our real, our regular uniforms are going to end up being like our alternates because we're wearing all these alternate ones. And it's funny you mentioned Oregon, their original uniforms were very unique and one of my favorites with the duck on the helmet, totally unique. Really cool. And I mean, I kind of get it with them because they got Phil Knight and Nike and, all the Nike money and, they want to do all that stuff. But I guess that's my biggest fear is that, we were sitting here talking and, we're only going to wear our regular orange and white like two or three games this year.
Bear, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. A lot of people don't realize that design, that duck on the helmet, that was actually a deal that the University of Oregon made with Disney, with Walt Disney. I mean, that's true. You can look that up.
That's Donald Duck.
To use that duck. And those uniforms, I mean, when you and I were growing up, and that's what Oregon had, those were great. They had a green jersey, gold pants, and at home, and on the road they went to gold pants with the white jersey. I mean, it was a classic-looking uniform, and they have all but gotten away from that. I am so with you on this. I don't want to see the classic Tennessee orange home jersey just go away, where we get to see it for when Alabama comes in, and we get to see it, maybe a couple other times, and then the rest of the time we're looking at alternate uniforms. I get the idea that they're trying to appeal to young student athletes, because they want to see something a little edgy. You can still do that, but keep it unique, keep it special, keep it an alternate uniform. Don't make it a co-regular uniform.
Christopher Gabriel with us. All right, CG Bear, you guys are up on the porch right now, sipping cold lemonade. I want to turn the direction of this conversation back towards the field. Let's talk about Neyland Stadium a little bit, CG. This will be kind of a new look Neyland that we go back to. Some new amenities. You got Dr. Danny's party deck being unveiled up there. You got the new letters on the side of the stadium, some new club seating down on the field and everything. Chris, you and I were having an interesting conversation over text this week about if we were, because it's not going to be a sellout for Ball State. They very rarely sell out Neyland Stadium anymore. if you were building a new stadium for the University of Tennessee from scratch, we're starting over for whatever reason. I know we don't want to do this because we love Neyland, but just in this alternate universe that we're going to inhabit for a few minutes here, what would be, you think, what do you think the desired capacity for a new SEC football stadium in 2022 would be?
Well, that's a great question. And I think it speaks to a lot of different things that are economic, you know, we'll say fiscal reality for fans these days, as well as the availability of games on so many different electronic devices, the advent of streaming services where you can get them all over the place. I think we all, let's acknowledge the fact that we all love the fact that Neyland is going to be 101,915. We like that it's going to stay above 100,000. But your question is different than that. Your question is, if I was designing a new Neyland Stadium, and for those tuning in late, we don't want Neyland to go away. Let's make real clear on that.
Yes.
But if I was the designer of a new Neyland, here's what I would do. My new Neyland would have 80,000 seats. It would have the end zone seats close to the back goal line, as close as you're allowable, which is where they're at right now. But I wouldn't have them curved. I wouldn't have the curved end zones. I would have them flush to the goal lines. The sideline seating, I would mimic Autzen Stadium at Oregon or the Swamp. I'd move the seats about about 8 feet closer. I'd still have the angle of the seating area going straight up. But what I would do is this. I would keep the idea of two or three levels of skyboxes above the second deck if it was going to be a two-deck stadium, because unlike at LSU, they have two levels of skyboxes on the sideline stands, and then you get to the upper deck. If you've ever sat in that upper deck, and I have, you are way up and way back from the field. At Neyland, it's a much more intimate experience. So I would have those same type of skyboxes. Essentially what I'm saying is I'd have the sideline stands like they do now at Neyland, and of course we would include all the club seats and what have you, and that would be my biggest point. The end zone seating would mimic what they've done at LSU. That end zone addition they made is fantastic. It's flush to the field. They have multiple levels for the regular fans. They have multiple levels of luxury suites, and they have multiple club seating themed areas. I would put that at both ends of this new Neyland. I would have the seats right on top of the field going straight up, have all the luxury seats, have plenty of great seats for the fans, have it about 80,000, and make sure that the architect understood, however you configure this, whatever angle you decide, make sure that we have the loudest possible stadium we can have. That's what I would do.
Christopher Gabriel with us this afternoon. If you're wondering, why are these guys talking about this? They're not building a new stadium. Chris, this all stemmed from the poll that Danny White ran last week about the font on the field and the big debate that happened there. And some guy rigged the Twitter poll because Tennessee fans are completely insane. And Christopher said one of the funniest things I've ever heard. It was over text. You know, sometimes like a text just hits differently. Chris said, Tennessee fans will argue over literally anything. They will go to war over the length of the blades of grass on the field. And he said, in all caps, make it shorter.
It's true, though, isn't it? I mean, and you know, it's funny, when I voted, because I voted in that poll, and when I voted, there were about 12 or 13,000 votes, and at that moment, it was 73% in favor of the new font, 27% in favor of the old, and it's funny that Danny White did that, because I've never liked that font on the field.
Really?
Reminded me of going to school, grade school, you know, and we'd had the rulers with the numbers. I never liked that font. I thought, hey, that's kind of a cool new thing. I like that. And in fact, you know what used to bother me? The T at the middle of the field, you would see the line of the 50-yard line running through the T.
Oh.
And I would sit there and think, how the hell can other schools get their logo at the middle of the field and get it right? And Tennessee's got a giant line through the T. So I think if you put, I'm not going to mention Twitter names, but if Danny White did a thing with the grass, you've got Derek from Alcoa coming on going, I am so sick and tired of people changing things at Neyland. grow that grass out, Danny. I mean, that's what you'd have.
Butch wanted to go synthetic turf. I mean, that was his long-range vision. Like, if he were still here, that probably would have happened by now.
Yeah, Butch spent way too much time in the sun. Right? He spent way too much time in the sun. You know, I mean, I have the framed, one of those framed Neyland turfs. I was at that Vandy game. That's where it came from. And I don't want to see, especially in an area like Knoxville, I don't ever want to see Neyland Stadium go to synthetic turf ever again. And I don't think they will. That would be ridiculous. I get it if they ever did it in Florida or LSU. I don't know if they have bluegrass. You know what? I don't care. I just hope they don't do it in Neyland. But, yeah, I mean, what would be your ideal Neyland Stadium?
I think that if you were building it again, for some reason, which, again, for the third time, nobody is advocating here. We all love Neyland Stadium. Please put down the pitchforks and blowtorches. I think that the capacity would probably be like 80,000 or so, Chris. And I know that's a drastic reduction, but I look at the Titans are the state NFL team here, and they have a 69,000-seat stadium in Nashville. And they are literally – this is a team that had the best record in the AFC last year. They are begging people online right now to buy these tickets. They're coming out with new 5-game packs and everything. So, I mean, the day and age of filling 100,000 seats, I don't know if people are sitting here, well, if we get good again, we'll sell it out. And I don't think so. You'll sell it out maybe once or twice a season for really big games. But – when Ball State's in town, when Missouri's in town, you're going to get about 85, 90,000 people in there if you're doing well. If you're going through a bad time, if Jeremy Pruitt's your coach, I mean, you're going to have maybe 65, 70,000 in there.
Now, I have to, before I address that, I've got to give you a little grief over something you just said a second ago. You said, and I know you have the tape on this, you said now the Titans, and then you said, that's the NFL team here.
Now, yes.
Now, you didn't think that I didn't know that, did you?
No, I know you know that, Chris. I know we're not dealing with. I know you didn't just fall off the turnip wagon yesterday, Christopher Gabriel.
It concerned me for a moment because it struck me like me saying, you know, Trey Lance is going to be the quarterback for the 49ers. That's the NFL team out in the Bay Area. Let me address what you were saying, because I think you're making a really valid point here, Russ, that when you look at things like attendances around the country, and guys like you and Marcus and Bear and I, that's what we do. We're checking. Man, they are down. I realize that, you know, you can't get a ticket in Bama at Bama Brigade, but we remember when they were on probation and they were going through coach after coach, and they were not selling out Bryant Denny Stadium. Hell, they were going to Legion Field for years until they finally decided to keep it on campus. Attendance nationwide is down. You are seeing empty seats in stadiums everywhere, except for the huge rivalry game, you know, the big game that's going to have a major impact on a division or a conference championship. And I think that with Neyland, you know, and again, going back to the amount of devices that are available, and for the fourth time, nope, we're not advocating for a new stadium. We love Neyland. It's one of the great cathedrals in college football. But if they were building a new one, Russ, I'm right there with you. I don't see any way that they would build something bigger than 80,000 seats. I just don't.
Yeah, it's interesting. So
I just wish they'd go back to chair. If the only thing I would change is make all the seats chairbacks.
Well, this is the first phase of, you know, four or five separate renovations over the next couple of years that we're going to see. So I'll be interested to see when all that is said and done, you know, come 10 years from now, I think the stadium is going to look very different. I mean, it looks very different now than it did 20 years ago. So,
yeah, I bet we can all agree. We've agreed on just about everything today. I bet we can all agree on this. Whatever phase it is, for the love of all things orange and white, fix, renovate, revamp, and beautify the exterior of the southeast, the south, and the southwest end of the stadium. Because I haven't been there in a few years, but well, last time I was there, it was awful. It was a joke. And that's why when you Russ, I've said this to you on air and off air, when you see those shots of the establishing shots, they're always from the inside of Neyland. They're not from the outside, certainly not from that part of the stadium, because it just doesn't look good. This is one of the most magnificent cathedrals in college football. And I ask fans, go to Notre Dame, go to Michigan, Ohio State, go to Austin Stadium, Husky Stadium in Seattle, go to Oklahoma and Nebraska. You will see administrations that have taken care of the exterior of those stadiums. This school, Tennessee, has done a great job with the west side. The north side, you know, some of it's obviously covered up by trees and, you know, the gym and everything else. But that's, you know, the northwest side looks pretty good and what have you. The east side's okay. It's not great. But the south side, I mean, just, you know, you just said a couple, within the last year or two, you had a chance to see Tiger Stadium at LSU. You go to Tiger Stadium at LSU, that place is a jewel. It is absolute jewel. It is no different than the stadiums I mentioned. You go to Notre Dame. And I have, listen, I grew up in Chicago, for heaven's sake. I have no love for Notre Dame, but that stadium is magnificent. I just want Danny White and everybody involved to pay attention and do something better for that part of the stadium.
Well, hopefully Josh Heupel pays attention and does something better for the team on the field. I think that's most fans care about. 2 weeks to go. Christopher Gabriel, we'll be talking again very soon, my friend. I hope you have a great weekend. As always, thanks for jumping on with us.
It's my great pleasure. Hello to all the great fans of your audience in the Southeast. Just, you know, it's a pleasure coming on, and I look forward to this. They're going to beat, if they don't beat Ball State by at least 50, something's wrong.
Oh, CG calling the shot. 50-point beatdown? What's the, is there a line somewhere on this? I thought I saw.
It's like 37. Yeah,
go check out FanDuel here during the break. CG, we love you, buddy. We'll catch up again soon.
Love you guys. Bye-bye.
Christopher Gabriel, KMJ Fresno. Follow him on Twitter, at CG Program. He loves the Vols and all things Knoxville. And it occurred to me, Bear, I guess if we have him on every other week, it'll be game day the next time.
Yeah.
He'd be good to have on.
Yeah, it's
game day.
I thought of that back when you went on vacation and got out of calendar.
You planned that far ahead?
Yeah.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I did.
What are we going to be doing 6 weeks from now?
I don't know about 6 weeks from now, but I remember when you were on vacation when I was getting Christopher on, I had my calendar out and I was like timing it because I knew we'd want him on the Thursday of kickoff. Now we may have to get a hold of somebody out there in Fresno and get them to tranquilize him before we bring him on that afternoon.
Being told the line for Tennessee and Ball State is 32 points on. He's saying 50 points, man.
I'm feeling it.
Kind of think maybe a happy medium in there. Give me a score, Ball State, right now, Bear. Put your money where your mouth is. What's the final?
45-3.
I can dig it.
That was quick.
I can dig it. Get a big league. Get some young guys in there.
Yeah.
See Taven Jackson run the show for a little bit.
Yeah.
How many games could he play and still be redshirted?
Four.
Four? Yeah, why not?
Big Orange Phillies, go check them out. Sunday, 1 to 3:30 p.m., our buddy Jabari Davis is going to be hosting a football season kickoff meet and greet in beautiful halls, 6625 Maynardville Pike. Our new phone line sponsor, Big Orange Phillies, hosting with Jabari and current Vols Princeton Fant and Latrell Bumpus. They'll be signing free autographed posters. They're going to have great food and drink specials at Big Orange Phillies this Sunday from 1 to 3:30 p.m. Go by, tell them you heard about it on Fan Run, see a couple of VFLs, and get ready for football season at Big Orange Phillies this Sunday afternoon. We got to take a quick timeout. We'll come right back. More of The Drive next on Fan Run Radio. Fan Run Radio, The Drive continues on a Thursday afternoon edition of the show. Russell Smith back with you. Open up the Big Orange Phillies phone lines to you. 865-546-8200. I'm sure Marcus will have more on this coming up here in just a few minutes, the top four at four. But Deshaun Watson, it's a final now.
Yeah.
11 games.
Whoopity-doo. You know why he got 11 and not 12?
Why?
Because if he did not, if he got 12, it would have bumped his contract. It would have nulled it for this year. That's how they got him to go along with it. $5 million, that's a drop in the bucket for somebody who just signed a quarter of a billion dollar contract. The non-apology apology. Jimmy coaching shorts and his old lady and their statement was tone deaf. What's her name? Mrs. Haslam?
Yeah, I don't know. Yes, it is Mrs. Haslam. Yeah.
Jimmy's old lady is what I'm going with. I just
disrespectful.
Put a little respect on D's name, please.
D's? Are you going to simp for D Haslam out here, Marcus?
I don't even know what she looks like. I just have the name because I have it ready for the
fairly
story.
Attractive. Anyhow, I think it's just kind of a.
It's getting weird.
I think it's. I mean, again, the only people that know for sure are Deshaun Watson and the women that alleged the things that they alleged that he did.
Yeah, there's.
I mean, he apologizes for all the pain and hurt he caused, but then he says he didn't do anything. It's like, which is it, dude?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just a sordid affair, and I go back to what I said yesterday. I think it sounds to me like both the league, the Players Association, the Browns, and Deshaun Watson himself are all ready to just
put this to go away.
I mean, 11-game suspension is big, especially considering he didn't play last year. I mean, that's a huge monkey wrench into their plan. The Browns are not going to make the playoffs this year. And I think for the NFL, I go back to what I said yesterday. If you saw the ugly scene we saw in Jacksonville for their first preseason game when he played there last week, if you suspend him for the entire season, it's a big talking point. It's a shadow that hangs over, obviously, the Browns, but also the NFL offices in New York and Roger Goodell. He's going to be asked about it anywhere he goes. And you're just putting off those ugly scenes of protest and demonstration and whatever until next year. And who knows how long it takes to die out. It'll die out eventually, and it'll always be part of his legacy, and people will talk about it and think about it when they see him. But I would imagine 5 years from now, if he's still in the league, there aren't going to be women's groups marching outside the stadium where he's playing, whatever. But if you do that, it's going to happen this year, at the end of this year, and then it's probably over. And you just move forward.
I mean,
I think they just wanted to get the whole situation behind them as quickly as possible.
The only issue I see with that, and we can circle back to it if you want, that first accuser, she wants her day in court.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to go all the way away until that's adjudicated.
No, it's like, you know, people say, I believe everybody. No, I don't believe everybody, and I don't believe her just out of hand, but she does deserve to be heard. And I think that there's a lot of smoke there, so I wouldn't be surprised if there's fire as well. Stay with us. Hour number two of The Drive coming up next here on Fan Run Radio.
The Drive.